Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you this week?
I am fantastic, Carlos. There was a lot happening at the Honda Classic last week. Lexi Thompson blew away the field in Thailand, and the PGA Tour moves down the road to Donald Doral for the WGC Cadillac Championship. That should be interesting. Let's go.
Let's go. Do you think we have time to cover the Honda Classic today?
We can speak the whole hour and a half talking about the Honda Classic. I got notes, Carlos. I got a ton of notes here.
Well, let me start with the weekend backspin. Like you say, we have a lot to talk about on the Honda Classic. It was an event that turned into a two-horse race. You can see it on Sunday, maybe starting on Saturday, because Adam Scott at the end came out on top. He opened with a birdie but was caught by Sergio Garcia when the Australian stumbled to two bogeys around the turn. But Scott moved back in front when Garcia missed a short putt. I can't believe it. I hate that new putting stroke that he has. But anyway, on the 11th hole and then played a superb fairway bunker shot on the 12th to set up a birdie. You know, the 35-year-old Aussie led by one, approaching the notorious stretch of holes known as the Bear Trap from 15th to 17th there at the PGA National. On Saturday, Scott had made a quadruple bogey 7 at the 15th. It was the second time he went that far. He did an 8 about 4 years ago. So he must have felt considerable nerves when he stood on the tee. But hey, he kept his calm and concentration and found the green safely. The lead remained at one stroke until the treacherous par 3 17th, where Garcia dropped another shot. Scott took a two-stroke advantage to the 72nd hole, and although Sergio birdied the last, Adam outlasted Sergio for a classic win. This was Adam Scott's 12th PGA Tour title and his first since moving back to the short putter. And let me tell you, since he made the switch for last year's President's Cup, I would say that after that last round when he started putting great, he's been putting excellent with the short putter. And he has played 10 events in which he has only finished twice outside the top 10. The victory pushed him back into the world's top 10th all the way to the 9th. He's the first player since Phil Mickelson, the 2009 Tour Championship, to win a PGA Tour event, having carded a quadruple bogey. Sergio Garcia, he had a chance to win and could have put the pressure on the Australian at the 16th, but from the fairway, just 160 yards out, he played a poor approach shot that came up well short of the green. He was unable to get up and down, and Scott, who also bogeyed the hole, remained one ahead. This was Sergio's sixth runner-up finish on the PGA Tour since he last won an event in 2012. That was the Wyndham Championship. And I really hate that putting stroke that he has right now. I don't know why he had to change the grip. He looks so uncomfortable. I mean, he's putting so much pressure. It's like I don't see him making any putts from even short distances like he did. Failed twice to make short putts. Some notables among the top 10, hey, Blaine Barber and Justin Thomas finished T3rd, the Web.com graduates. G-Mac, hey, 5th. Ricky Fowler, oh, my God, he started so great. He was 38 holes without a bogey, but then it went downhill from there. He finished T6 along with Vijay Singh. Also, hey, I have to mention about this guy keeps popping up in the top 10 and among the top leaderboards. It's Sung Kang from South Korea. He finished in a T10. So, hey, Fred, I got to mention the scoreboard of the old guys versus the young guys. Hey, the old guys are getting back through 17 tournaments. It's 11-6 now for the old guys, and the old guys are in a streak. Let me tell you, the last Three have won by them and six of the last seven. In fact, if you can go and say they are 11-2, only Spieth and Matsuyama have won in the last 13 after starting 0-4, and that golf news that they call the fall section of the wraparound schedule. So, hey, the old guys are making a comeback.
Yeah, the old guys are one of the storylines that I'm going to talk about here, Carlos. I'm sure you knew that. But there was a lot happening. You know, when the tour moves to Florida, golf gets just a little bit more serious as they start looking ahead a few weeks to Augusta National. You know, Adam Scott outlasted Sergio for the win. We know that, okay? And really, from Saturday through Sunday's final round, it boiled down to a match play event between Sergio and Adam Scott. Scott made 7 birdies in his first 13 holes on Saturday and was cruising. I mean, he was on cruise control. Everything was clicking. It was all perfect. It was all wonderful. All of a sudden, he steps up on the 15th tee and dunks one in the water. Then he goes over to the drop area, tries to make it too good, flies the green, finds the water over the green. All of a sudden, he's laying 4, and he's still in the drop zone. So, chips on, 2 putts later, routine quadruple bogey 7. So he comes to the tee with a 3-shot lead over Sergio. He leaves 15, 1 shot behind Sergio. What a change. You know, and as you mentioned, Scott just has a terrible record in the bear trap, holes 15, 16, and 17. In 8 appearances at the Honda Classic, I mean, he is just like a gazillion over par on those 3 holes. And as you mentioned, he had an 8 there previously a couple years ago. So this wasn't even his worst that he ever played there. Anyhow, Scott bounced back with a birdie at 17, finished around at 4 under par 66, and ended up tied with Garcia for the 54-hole lead. Sergio had several opportunities on Sunday, but once again failed to finish the deal, and Scott's final round, 1 under par 70, left him 1 shot ahead of Garcia for the win. Curious to note here, Carlos, that top 3 finishers at the Honda Classic, Adam Scott, Sergio, and Justin Thomas, all use alternative putting grips. Scott and Sergio use that pencil grip thing, and Justin Thomas uses a crosshand grip. You know, PGA National rewards veteran players. Knowledge is a valuable commodity at that golf course. Several veterans finished well up in the Honda Classic field. Defending champion Padraig Harrington, Davis Love, Ian Poulter, Paul Casey, and Retief Goosen all finished T43. Phil Mickelson wrapped up another Honda Classic at T37. But perhaps the most surprising of all, 53-year-old Vijay Singh had a great week collecting a T6 finish. One of the biggest disappointments of the week was Ricky Fowler. He was nearly perfect, set a record with 0 bogeys through the first 2 rounds. Saturday and Sunday were a different story, however. PGA National got even, though as Fowler made 8 bogeys in his last 36 holes versus 7 birdies and finished T6 with Vijay. Rory McIlroy missed the cut, was short with the media, left in a huff, obviously frustrated. He has a history of not playing well at PGA National and leaving early, if we all remember that. Jack and Barbara Nicklaus hosted Ryder Cup hopefuls for a dinner. Very interesting. Davis Love brought the guys over to Jack's house for some burgers and weenies, as well as some light conversation. I wonder if that will help him in Minnesota in a couple months. Another big story out of Palm Beach this week was Jason Bone's heart attack. Bone is a 42-year-old pro who has been a professional golfer since he earned $1 million by making a hole-in-one while still a sophomore at the University of Alabama. He has 2 wins on tour. Golf Channel's Tim Rosefort reported that Bone's heart attack occurred just after his round on Friday, and had it happened on the golf course, he would not have made it. Bone was stricken in the scoring tent, and paramedics were able to get blood thinners in him immediately. Bone required surgery to insert a stent for a 99% blockage. The good news is that he's recovering nicely and intends to return to the tour in the near future. Carlos, the tour heads to Doral. I can't wait. Donald Trump scheduled to make a few minutes away from campaigning to make an appearance. That should be interesting. Donald always makes a big splash, and even more so now with him running for the Republican presidential nomination. Going to have Secret Service guys there, helicopters flying in, media. Oh, it ought to be big. It ought to be big.
It's going to be big, and especially when he's winning big in Super Tuesday. Oh, my God, he's either going to be even bigger there. But hey, another mention from there, the Honda Classic, that Jason Vaughn incident, very scary. Thank God, you know, they got to him early because he was there, like you mentioned. Thank God he was in the tent. Otherwise, he would have not made it. It would have been a very sad story for one of the most beloved players in tour. And for Rory McIlroy, not good for him to be going that way, missing the cut. But hey, we know he doesn't have a good history there at PGA National. But one thing that I have to do mention is, you know, there are some players. We all know that it's very well expected that Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, the new Big Four, are going to be contenders at the Masters, or at least we expect them to do so. But it's also great that we're seeing that apparently it's not going to be only those four. I mean, Bubba Watson, who we all know is fit for playing in Augusta. He's been playing well. Now we see also Adam Scott playing well. Phil Mickelson's playing well. And we're going to talk a little bit later on about Louis Oosthuizen. You're going to talk about the LPGA now. But when I talk about the European Tour, Louis Oosthuizen is another player that's getting in shape as well. So I expect the Masters. I can't wait to see if all these players are playing great. Oh, my God, this Masters is going to be one heck of a tournament. So, hey,
there's another former Masters winner from South Africa, Charles Schwartzel, that has a win not too long ago that's not playing too badly either right now.
Yeah, and Henrik Stenson is another person that is playing well kind of too. So, I mean, so many good players playing well heading into the Masters. It could be one of the highest expectations, for a Masters tournament that we can think of. I mean, I don't know since when you have seen so many good players playing well heading into the Masters. So I really can't wait if this keeps going that way.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA. They were on the other side of the world. Lexi Thompson got her seventh LPGA Tour win by 6 strokes at the Honda LPGA Thailand. With the win, she jumps over Stacey Lewis to number 3 in the Rolex ranking. Curious note, Lexi becomes the first American winner in 2016 and the 4th winner in the first 4 events under the age of 24. Haru Nomura was the oldest winner so far at the age of 23. It also makes Lexi and Stacey as the only two Americans in the top 10 on the Rolex rankings, and they are the leaders for the U.S. Olympic team. Christy Kerr, number 14, Brittany Lynchcombe, 17, Allison Lee, 21, Jessica Korda, 22, and Morgan Pressel round out the top 25. Where's Michelle Wee? Well, she's clear down at number 40. That can easily be remedied if she gets back, if she's healthy here, wins a couple times. She'll jump up pretty fast. Hey, also, there was a Ladies European Tour event. The former world number 1, Jiai Shin, won the Ladies European Tour event in Australia, the RACV Lady Masters. Also want to note that a friend of Back 9 Report, Holly Clyborn, buried the last hole to finish alone in second place at 11 under par, Carlos.
There you go. Great for Holly there. And talking about Australia, you know, and on the European Tour, Louis Oosthuizen, he took a 3-shot lead into the last day, but his advantage was quickly reduced after he made a bogey on the second hole, and both American Peter Uihlein and Australia's Jason Scribner pick up shots. But he made his first travel to Australia, a winning one. Scribner tried Oosthuizen at the top of the board with a fine up and down from the sand and the seventh hole, but Oosthuizen struck back with a birdie of his own on the par 5. Further birdie at the 8th gave Oosthuizen a comfortable cushion and maintained his position at the head of the field throughout the back 9. Although Alexander Levy of France made a late charge to post a clubhouse total of 15 under par, Oosthuizen, he retained control and was able to cruise home to post a 71 and win by one shot He claimed by this way his 8th European Tour title and moved into the top 20 on the official World Golf Rankings all the way up to his 19th. He has reclaimed his 4th place from Brandon Grace on the list of most prolific South African winners on the European Tour. This win is the 6th by a South African player in the first 11 events of the 2016 European Tour, like you mentioned, Charles Schwartzel. And also, Brandon Grace have been the other winners there. They have been dominating the European Tour so far. Hey, like I said, Louis Hyson is playing great. He's feeling positive as the year first major looms on the horizon. And like I mentioned before, he will be a contender starting at the Masters, and can't wait for that. Any final comments on our weekend backswing before we go to the Par 5 news?
No, just the fact that I really thought the Honda Classic was really interesting. I really enjoyed watching it. There was a tremendous amount of storylines, and you could see by how much time we spent talking about tonight that golf is getting a little bit more serious now as we're running up to the Masters.
Yep, and the WGC is just this week, so it's going to be great. Let's take our first commercial. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our Par 5 News, presented by United Golf Network. Fred, you're going to tee it off, and you're going to talk a little bit about the Millennials Committee idea from Steve Mona that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and hopefully we can get him on the show to talk about it, but you're going to tell us a little bit about this committee idea from Steve.
Yeah, Adam Shupak from Golf Week reported last week in an interview with World Golf Foundation CEO Steve Mona that they intend to help grow golf by attracting more to the game through the formation of a Millennials Committee. That always works. You know, if you've got a problem, let's form a committee. The World Golf Foundation oversees the First Tee, World Golf Hall of Fame, and Golf 2020. The World Golf Foundation mission is to develop and support initiatives that positively impact lives through the game of golf and its traditional values. The Millennial Committee started meeting this year. It's made up of all 25 to 35 age people, as it should be. It's a blend of people from inside and outside golf, including people from some of the big tech firms. Long story short, the final report and recommendations aren't officially made yet, but, you know, Mona says he feels they're heading in the right direction. There are three separate strategies. One is ensuring that golf facilities are millennial ready, because if they start driving millennials to golf facilities and they show up and it's not the experience that they were promised, the purpose is defeated. Well, what's millennial ready? It's an environment that young golfers, young players feel comfortable in. They address things like a dress code, technology, smartphones and tablets on the golf course, music on the golf course. I got to tell you, I played with some of my friends in an outing last fall, and the guys playing ahead of us, there was two couples. They like to have a good time. They really enjoy playing golf. It was a lot of fun watching. We were behind them, and they just had a blast. But they have to be blaring music. They're blaring music out of their smartphones and out of the speakers in the cart, the whole deal. They're dancing, you know. I mean, the girls are doing flips. It was a lot of fun. But it's a whole different world, you know, from stuffy old white guy golf, for sure. So anyhow, things like music, alcohol, all that kind of stuff, you know, not the old stereotypes. You can't just go to a place where you have to dress a certain way. You know, you can't have your phone on. That's not going to work for millennials. So they've also decided they need to have a presence at some places where the young people hang out, like Coachella Music Festival, Lollapalooza, South by Southwest. You know, all those places, they just need to get in there and at least have their name in there, maybe do some advertising, put some signs up, whatever. And then the third piece is the whole communications message that is the least defined right now. Those are like the tasks that need to be taken. And so they're working on it. They got this committee going. They're also recognizing that Top Golf and Foot Golf may be viable entities to help bring more people to golf. And they're also going to be working with those two organizations in the future. You know, Carlos, we've been talking for some time that to attract the younger generation to golf, country clubs and golf courses have to become more open to different attitudes from these younger people that are just now beginning to enter the workplace, make some serious money, and have a force in the marketplace. Golf, like any other form of entertainment, has to compete with a finite amount of disposable income. Country club and green fees payers are aging. It's mandatory that the game attract younger people. It is great that someone's actually looking at this stuff and trying to come up with some answers, rather than just sticking their heads in the sand and saying, this is the way we've always done it, and we'll continue to do it. So they're trying, Carlos. They're looking at it. I don't know if they got the answers. I'm sure someone will figure it out sometime, but at least they're working on it. We got a committee.
Another committee. Oh, my God. This is I get it that, you know, golf resorts have this Generation Y problem. I know that. Young adults are not flocking to the fairway the way baby boomers did. And young business travelers even are the cinch to commit 4 or 5 hours to single game. I know it's different. I know resorts are pondering that question too, making changes already. I've seen it. Changes that would have been unthinkable even a decade ago. I've seen, like you mentioned, adding speakers to golf carts, Wi-Fi access on the course. They have been building high-tech training centers, even miniature golf putting courses. You know, but I think the premise that only if you attract the millennials, you're going to grow the game of golf, that's not, I don't think so. You know, because you have to compete, you have to keep also, you have to see that there's a statistic that the problem is that the adults are the ones that are leaving the game. It's not that you're getting just the same amount that are leaving are coming in, so you're not growing the game. The game is not growing. The game has been stuck. Okay, so you have to see a way also to include the people that are leaving. Why are they leaving? Okay, it's not that you're not attracting the millennials. It's just that your adults are already leaving as well. So what are you doing that they are leaving? Because they were your patrons, they were your players, they were your fans. Why are they leaving? I know Tiger's not there, but hey, just because Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, and Larry McIlroy are the youngsters and they're attracting the millennials, yeah, that's right. But hey, why are the others leaving? That's just my point, and that's the point I made 2 weeks ago when we talked about in the practice bench about this subject that the millennials should be the core, like Steve says. I just believe, yeah, they should be attracted to it. I think there's enough golf courses and resorts that you can, you know, make it attractive for the people that like golf the old way and golf the new way, or you can integrate them somehow. There's place for everything. I just don't like the idea that you're just concentrating and making the goal just the millennials, okay? It's just, to me, it's just not attractive. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm all from the old school or whatever, but hey, don't leave the old guys out, okay? You have to keep them there because you're going to attract the millennials? Cool, but the old guys are the ones that are going to feel left out. So anyway, it's like this old bottom. You're going to be having you're not going to have the bottom, right, on the cube? So you're going to keep putting things in, but they're going to keep falling out. So you're not going to grow the game anyways. I mean, I don't know. Hope we can talk to Steve about this and see what his opinion is on it, but hey. I don't know.
We're trying to get him in here. We'll see if we can get her done.
I'm old. I'm old. I think that's what it is. Anyway.
You are old.
Yeah. I know.
Not as old as me yet, though.
Yeah, but you're with it. I'm not. That's the thing. Anyway, let's move on to the next item. And talking about old, Augusta National is old. In golf tradition and Augusta National may go hand in hand, but the course that hosted the annual Masters tournament since 1934 is ever changing and evolving. Most famously, there was the Tiger proofing of the course after Woods just won his second green jacket in 2001 to lay claim to all four major titles at the same time. But the latest potential change, according to Golf Week report, would allow club officials to lengthen the par 5 13th hole, one of the most famous risk reward par 5s in the game that plays like a par 4.5. And the last stop in the Augusta National's three-hole stretch nickname Angling Corner. The hole is nicknamed Azalea, bearing the name of the plant for which Augusta National is most noted and whose shrub lines line up from left from tee to green and placed at the distance of 510 yards with a sweeping dock leg to the left towards a green protected by a tributary of Race Creek. It is an extremely short par 5 by PGA Tour standards. You know, if you come to think about it, last year's U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, there were four par 4 holes longer than 510 yards, and par 5s on the tour now regularly top 600 yards. The risk reward 13th was the easiest hole on the course at last year's Masters, playing to a stroke average of 4.55. It yielded 20 of the tournament's 47 eagles. While true that par is an arbitrary figure and everyone in the field is playing the same course, it makes sense that Augusta National officials would seek options to lengthen a hole on which Rory McIlroy and others have hit a 9-iron into the green for their second shot. In 2002, the tee at the 13th hole was moved back about 25 yards from its original distance of 480 yards. I remember Bubba Watson, who notably had a sand wedge in for his approach on the final round 2014 after he hit a monstrous 360-yard drive over the trees that guard the left side of the fairway. But for this, Golf Week reported that the club is in the midst of a $27 million deal. This guy sell money like they have pocket change. With neighboring Augusta Country Club to purchase land that is located behind Augusta National's 12th green and the 13th tee. That is now the site of Augusta Country Club's ninth hole at 388-yard par 4. A golf designer with reroute at Augusta Country Club, founded in 1899 and designed by Donald Ross, with a new ninth hole. In return, Augusta National will have the ability to move the tee on the 510-yard par 5 13th hole back, while also giving itself some infrastructure and more privacy. And don't discount that last point. At various times, gazing out and onto Emin Corner also means seeing golf carts on the ninth hole at Augusta Country Club. Years ago, an errant shot from the hole landed near the 12th green as Tiger Woods was about to putt. You can bet that part of the reason for the purchase, perhaps is the biggest part, is so Augusta National can have the land, and so Augusta Country Club can for it.
Well, I tried to find out. I contacted some people the last couple of days. No one knows for sure what the Masters makes each year on the tournament itself and its branding. But it has been rumored that they spent $75 million on creating Berkman's Place. That's that big building out there along the fifth fairway that's hid back in the trees. And that, they said it paid for itself in 2 years. It's only open for 1 week a year. Okay? Yeah. All right, so they're not really hurting for money, okay?
No.
So here's some numbers for you. A badge to get into the Berkman's Place, okay, is only available through members for corporations with a 10-ticket limit, and it costs $6,000 each, okay?
Wow.
That's $60,000 just to get into Berkman's Place. That's not including the $500, $600 per ticket to get into the grounds if you're buying them off eBay or somebody, okay? So I think Augusta National are going to probably afford that $27 million it paid for those 2 acres. But I do have some real questions here, Carlos. Number one, if we can have short par fours on golf courses that play like long par threes, why can't we have short par fives? I think it's great the way it is. Why do we have to change it? Just because Bubba can hit a driver and a nine iron up there, so what? He's out driving everybody all the rest of the year anyhow, so what? But my really biggest question is, are they still going to have the pea bush back there at the 13th tee? You know, inquiring minds want to know. Carlos, let's move on. Curtis Strange, you remember him?
Who?
Won a little tournament a couple times. U.S. Open, you remember him? Did a little work for ABC. Yeah, did a little work for ABC. Since the firing of Greg Norman, Fox Sports has added Paul Azinger and now Curtis Strange to its broadcasting team. Strange had been working as tower analyst for ESPN, but that network's golf inventory has been cut substantially with the loss of the early round U.S. Open rights and the decision last year to give up its British Open rights with 1 year remaining on the contract. Strange said that led him to put out a couple of feelers. He had worked with Mark Loomis, Fox's golf producer at ABC and ESPN, and Strange said he and Loomis have stayed in touch over the years. This will be Strange's first job as an on-course reporter. He worked as the lead analyst for ABC and later as a hole announcer for ESPN, but he said he has wanted to try on-course work since his ABC days. Strange said he will work the Masters for ESPN before joining Fox at the U.S. Amateur Four Ball in May, and will work the U.S. Open, U.S. Senior Open, and the U.S. Amateur. Strange said, I'm excited to have another opportunity. I didn't know what was going to happen because all three teams were locked up with solid announcers. I'm very fortunate to find a role and a role I'm very much looking forward to simply because you're right in the middle of the action. Carlos, I see this and the addition of Azinger as very strong signs for Fox. Excuse me. These two guys bring experience and a no-nonsense attitude to the Fox broadcast team. They will not tolerate the poor work that Fox did last year on their USGA coverages.
Hopefully. I really like those observations, and I second that. I think it's a very good upgrade, and they're heading in the right direction. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the European Tour. I have a couple of news here about them. And, you know, playing a round of golf with some of the world's best players is something most golf fans can only dream about. But those dreams could now be a reality after the European Tour launched its new travel club. In partnership with GolfBreaks.com, the European Tour Travel Club offers unique experiences for golf fans looking to combine breakaways with once-in-a-lifetime rounds. These include the chance to play in the Pro-Am at the European Tour event, meaning you could be teeing off alongside many of the European Tour stars to play a full 18 holes. Pro-Am packages for some of the most prestigious events on the European Tour are now available, so hurry up. With the Sunday Pins and Monday offers, individuals or groups of friends can book to play on a full tournament course set up the day after an event, giving the fans a truly unique taste of what is it like to compete on the European Tour stage for real. Following the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, for example, golf fans can play the famed Palmer course with the pin positions the same way they were the day before. A two-night Sunday Pins and Monday package starts from £689. The European Tour Travel Club also offers travel packages to the European Tour's network of world-class venues in their properties portfolios, as well as a host of tournament venues around the world, whether it's the 2018 Ryder Cup venue of Le Golf National in Paris, Spain number one course PGA Catalunya, or the famous Quinta do Lago in Portugal. There is something to appeal to all golf fans. Customers can book for more than 2,000 golf breaks all over the world at golfbreaks.com, featuring a true bucket list of venues across the U.S., Europe, Sunshine Fairways, or the classic links of Britain and Ireland. Score another hit, and this is a big one, for Keith Pelly and the European Tour. On all other news, it has been confirmed that the Paul Laurie match play will this year be played at Archer Field Links on the Fitra Links course. The event continues to be part of the 2016 European Tour International schedule, and the 64-man knockout match play format will remain the same. The date of the tournament, from August 4 to 7, will also stay unchanged, with the €1 million prize fund intact. And finally, Paddy Harrington revealed that he's prepared to work in the background at the Ryder Cup as vice captain under Darren Clark. Harrington has played in the event 6 times and worked with Paul McGinley in the 2014 as vice captain. According to the Irish Examiner, Harrington says he has spoken to Clark about the working behind the scenes at Hazeltine. Harrison was part of the team that helped bring golf back together to the Olympic Games, and he has stated, you know, it's a real long shot for me to be playing both the Olympics and the Ryder Cup. He says that he needs to win at least twice this year to have any chance of playing in Brazil and Minnesota. So Fred, if he's not on the team, he said that at least he would like to be part of Darren Clark's backroom team.
Yeah, I think that would be a good deal. I don't know, if Paddy I think both of them from Ireland. I would think they're probably pretty good buddies. So I would think that would be a good thing. Yeah, a lot of news going on the European Tour. Keith Pelley keeping things shook up over there. Hey, we talked before about Tim Finchem and other leading golf executives trying to get some of the top name golfers to travel to Brazil to set up a test event prior to the Olympics. You have a new golf course, new personnel running it, and the tournament. A trial run seems like a pretty good idea. The problem is that because of the compact schedule of every major golf tour around the world, because of the scheduling conflicts demanded by the Olympics, big-name golfers did not have time to jet down to Rio to play in a meaningless event. So, Rio 2016 has confirmed the details of a golf test event that will be staged at the newly constructed Olympic golf course on March the 8th. The Aquisi Rio Golf Challenge will feature 9 leading Brazilian players, 5 men and 4 women, playing an exhibition event in the stroke play format. No one's going to be allowed to watch, though, Carlos. It's going to be a little funsy deal. The test event will be closed to public, as games organizers focus on testing operations at the new venue. I see this whole Olympic thing as just being a nightmare. I see this thing being one of the biggest, cluster mess-ups in the history of golf. I just can't imagine it. They're going to present along the Rio 2016 to observe the event and ensure that the key areas are tested. The main aspects that we will test are the course itself and the results system. It's a tough course. There's quite a lot of wind, so it will bring the best out of the players. The male players are Alexander Rocha, Rafael Becker, Daniel Stapp, Rafael Barcelonas, and Rodrigo Lee, all really famous, really popular, really recognizable names. The women players include Miriam Nagel, Victoria Lovelady, Candy Hanneman, and Lucianne Lee. The course designed specifically for the 2016 Olympics was designed, of course, by American Gil Hance, will have the capacity for 15,000 fans during the Olympic tournament to be held in August. Yeah, Carlos, I have my doubts about this whole thing. I think it's just a stupid idea. Brazil is not the place to be doing this. Maybe I'll be wrong and it'll be great, but
Fred, question.
Yes.
You're against the prep or against the Olympics holding the golf tournament?
I'm not, I think golf in the Olympics is dumb. I've said that before. I just don't see it. We have enough world golf events, guys travel around the world and play. They're going to get Asia involved. This whole thing is a money grab to get golf more in China and Asia, and a couple of underdeveloped countries. But it's going to happen there anyhow because guys play around the world. So and the guys don't want to go down there and play. We've messed up the schedules on the PGA Tour, on the LPGA Tour. It's a nightmare. The whole thing is a freaking nightmare. So maybe it's going to turn out great, and it's it all comes back to me, Carlos, to TaylorMade, Ping, Srixon, all the major golf manufacturers, club makers, and balls, and all that kind of stuff that want to sell more stuff in China. That's what it all boils down to me. And I just don't think it was necessary. But people bought into it. They think it's going to be great. We'll see. And in the second part of it, Brazil does not have the infrastructure to handle it. You know, it's going to be a nightmare. It is going to be a nightmare.
In this one, I disagree. You know that I have been all about golf in the Olympics. I think it's the greatest idea ever. There is a handful of players, really, that don't want to go. Handful of players. All the top players want to go. Rory McIlroy. Jordan Spieth has said that this is his main goal this year. Rory McIlroy wants to go. Jason Day wants to go. Ricky wants to go. Lydia Ko said this is her main focus this year. I mean, everybody knows what the Olympics means. Okay, I just think the prep tournament is a big mistake. You don't take a prep tournament, hey, just do whatever you want, but golfers just go once, go play, and that's it. They don't have to go and do a prep tournament to see how everything's going to turn out. I think that it's going to turn out great. I just don't think the format that they're using this year on this Olympic edition is the one perfect for it. I think they should change it, and that's what the players have communicated already. I don't think is inclusive enough, and I don't think it's just to get more people to play on the Asian countries because those players, I mean, they're not going to be represented, those countries there, right now. Okay? Unless you're on the top players right now, and those countries don't have, you know, those Asian countries don't have the top players, they're not going to be playing. So basically,
I think there's only going to be, 17 countries, right?
Right.
Individuals if they're like in the top 50 or whatever.
That is correct. And that's the problem. That's why I don't think it's a money grab thing because anyway, they're not earning any money here in the Olympics. And yes, the big companies are going to get their promotions and everything, but they do that everywhere. Yes, the Olympics have a bigger reach than they would have right now on the Common State and the ESPN, Fox or whatever they're being exposed right now, but truly, to me, this is a way of introducing the Olympic spirit to the players right now, which they really are accepting it. And mostly, I would say Adam Scott is the biggest one that has said that he doesn't want to go. But really, it's just a handful of players that don't want to go. The big names, they do really want to go, and they want to play to represent the countries. But I think the format has to be changed to include more of the countries and then really make it a more worldwide appeal. But right now, I don't think they're going to get that world appeal of players to be, you know, those companies to get that effect that you're saying.
Well, Carlos, I will, in reply to what you're saying, I do have to say that basketball is a perfect model to look at, okay? Because when basketball went to including the professionals, look what that did for Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, all these guys on an international scale. You know, the Chinese leagues now are great. Are you still there? No.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, okay, good enough. All right, I'm seeing you. The Chinese leagues, professional leagues, are growing rapidly, and they're attracting now some NBA players who can't quite, you know, are on the edge not making it in the NBA, so they're going to China now. You know, the Italian leagues or the European leagues have grown in stature because of the pros in the Olympics. So, you know, I guess that works. It worked for them. I'm not a big fan of pro basketball in the Olympics either. So, you know, but I guess it works. So I guess that's all. We have to look to basketball if we want to compare what may happen in golf.
I think there are different sports, and you know, basketball is an easier sport that has been massified better and easier to massify than golf right now. So, but like you say, we'll have to see what happens. But definitely, it's going to be a way to grow golf. And I heard Keith Pelley saying, you know, that it was going to be a great opportunity for them to showcase the sport of golf worldwide. So we'll see. Anything that is to grow the game, hey, I'm all for it. And specifically, the Olympics is the biggest sports sporting event in the world. So hopefully we can get this. But let's wrap up our Part 5 news presented by United Golf Network, and you have some words from our sponsors.
Yes, Carlos, they want every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available at huge discount savings. You could save 17% on everything you need for the golf course, Carlos, simply becoming a member of the United Golf Network. 17%. 17% off of a $400 driver is a nice chunk of change. 17% off of a dozen golf balls. Buy two or three dozen at a time. Get them shipped in. You know, save the shipping, all that good stuff. So there's a lot of good reasons to become United Golf Network members. Click on to UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
You can start joining right now while you're listening to us here in the Back 10 Report. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we have the practice range when we will be talking about social media reporting. Is this a good or a bad thing? Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each one of us take a shot at it. That's why we call it the practice range. This week, we're going to talk about social media reporting and its impact in the world of sports, specifically on golf. Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? Well, let's start by saying, you know, during the past two decades, social media has evolved quite drastically, both in how we utilize it and how prominent it is within our culture. From what once was chat rooms on AOL, AOL Plus, instant messaging on AIM, and glittery profiles on MySpace is now 140 characters on Twitter and categorizes by hashtags and personalized communities on Facebook. The social media landscape has evolved dramatically and is now woven deeply in our social culture. The rise of social media as part of our life, culture, and, of course, sports has been awesome in so many ways. Not only has it created countless platforms for people to communicate with each other, but it's completely transformed how we get and provide information. Somehow, from this untamed universe of thoughts and ideas, a new kind of relationship emerged between sports, the men and the women that compete in them, and the people who love to watch it. Athletes were no longer these unreachable icons, but actual human fans and reporters could talk too. But because social media apps like Facebook and Twitter offered a kind of safety zone. And all of that is good, but man, oh man, social media is such a double-edged sword. Beyond the communication aspects of social media is the fog of information that never stops flowing and undergoes almost zero quality control. In the world of sports, this can be, well, problematic. Anyone with a camera, anyone with a smartphone, can report, can become a reporter. So we're going to take as a base what happened last week with the misinformation from Robert Lucetich, the Tigers biographer, on his deteriorating condition. You know, I was one that, for once, I mean, sometimes you feel when you're in the media like you're trying to compete with everybody to try to get the news out first and try to get everybody. And I have to say that I fell for what Robert Lucetich did without waiting to see what would be the reaction from Tiger, and just like I did a lot of other media outlets, started to publish Tiger's done, you know, Tiger's condition is worse, he's not going to ever come back. But this, you know, then Mark Steinberg came out and said, hey, no, wait, it's not true, it's not happening. I was seeing Lucetich answering to everybody. Hey, Steinberg's saying no, and he was. And then Lucifish was trying to contradict Steinberg, saying that he's never been transparent. Tiger has never been open to everything, and he keeps everything inside and not publishing his conditions and all that. So that forced Tiger to then do that famous video where he hit an iron inside in his house in a simulator, and to discredit the reporting. Was this all good? Is it bad? This condition about reporting that way? I don't know. To me, it really, you have to take it from who it is. I thought that because Robert Lucetich had done his biography, he's a Fox reporter, he would be a little bit credible on this. I don't know which his source was or what, but definitely you have to really sometimes take things for, you know, maybe with a little grain of salt, because but with Tiger, you never know. It's true that he never keeps anything open. So I was surprised that he really did came through, even though it was by Twitter and a webpage. It wasn't, you know, a conference that he did. So, Fred, to me, it's a double-edged sword. But at the end of the day, it can be problematic because anyone, you don't know who to believe. You really have to get your sources straight and try to see before you with your report and what's going on.
Yeah, Carlos, I exactly correct. It's a double-edged sword. You know, in the old days of reading a newspaper account of what was going on, at least we knew the bias of the reporting media outlet. We were able to read between the lines and kind of sort out some semblance of a truth. On Facebook and Twitter, we don't know who the players are. We have no idea what their end game really is. Are they simply trying to raise their stats for clout? You know, we don't know what's going on. This thing where Lucetich reported that Tiger was regressing, his rehab was not really going well, wasn't able to stand, wasn't able to do this, wasn't able to do that. You know, it was picked up by every Facebook and Twitter follower and instantly beamed across the stratosphere and became the national news. Well, then the real news media converged on Tiger's agent, Mark Steinberg, to get the story. Nota Begay was quoted. And finally, Tiger himself posted the video on Twitter showing him hitting some iron shots in a golf simulator in his home. Two problems arise for me in this situation. What you may see or hear on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram is not necessarily true. I know this is not new ideas here, not news, but people see stuff and they just believe it's real. It you know, you got to take everything that you see on social media with a grain of salt. And the second part of this is that Tiger Woods' seclusion and exclusion of the media from his life makes him more susceptible to this type of reporting. Some people think they've got a little bit of news on Tiger and they want to get it out there because he is such a popular figure. In the case of Lucetich's incorrect post, it forced Tiger to review it publicly, which maybe is a good thing. We at least got to see, you know, that he is progressing in his rehab. The misinformation is bad, but the follow-up was good. Does the ends justify the means? You know, that's the age-old argument. Steinberg and Tiger were forced to address his condition, but they did it through Twitter and his webpage, not face-to-face with reporters, didn't call somebody up, didn't talk to them, just put a tweet out there. Mike Perkey has a great piece in this week's Global Golf Post. It addresses exactly this point. Social media, especially Twitter, it's like the Old West. There is no law, very few rules to what can be posted, which leads to wonder how much is true and who do you trust? Well, Carlos, I really do not have the answers for any of this. You and I are actively involved in Facebook and Twitter. We promote our writing. We promote our radio show. We try and inform other golfaholics like ourselves of kind of what's going on in the golf world. But I, for myself, and I'm pretty sure for you, we check our sources. We are very comfortable with the information that we put out. There's been many, many times that I've heard of something, a rumor, and I've waited, you know, and I thought, now this, you know, I got to check this out. You know, I wrote for a local newspaper here in town for many years. And a lot of times I was forced to have confirmed sources, two sources to a story before they would run it. So I'm kind of used to this, and I want to make sure that we don't put a lot of stuff out there that isn't true. And I feel like we've done a pretty good job of that. And we're coming up on our third year anniversary for the show, and I feel very proud of that. So, but as someone who uses Facebook and Twitter, you got to be careful what you listen to, what you see, and what you read. So I don't have any answers for it, but I just advise everyone to use a measure of caution of what they're reading on social media, and make sure you verify it via a reputable source before passing it on as gospel.
I have to agree. I really don't. I think you covered everything that I didn't cover. I think the message is clear. Just check your sources before blowing anything out of proportion. There's a lot of people out there just trying to get their 15 minutes of fame and putting even this famous thing about the headlines, not having anything to do with the actual thing just to get the click. So just verify your sources. Hey, Fred, let's move on to our final putts. Now I'm going to start talking a little bit. You know, Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, the champions of the NBA, he's a man who keeps his promises. You know, America's biggest sports star of the moment, Stephen Curry. He's the supernova of sports right now. And his teammate, Andre Iguodala, spent last Tuesday off at Augusta National Club. Thanks to a deal they made with Coach Kerr back in June, he said, "Win the championship and I'll get you there." Well, as you might remember, Warriors social media manager Julie Thayer, she tweeted a video that captured the exact moment that the two players celebrated their title win and Kerr's figurative rain check to the prestigious golf club. You might remember Andre Iguodala shouting, "We're going to Augusta! We're going to Augusta!" I just laughed because, you see, I was telling a friend of mine, see how that is much better than saying, "We're going to Disney! We're going to Disney!" I was just laughing with that. But anyway, it did happen. Although Kerr headed straight to Miami for Wednesday's game against the Heat, a foursome of Kerr, Iguodala, team executive Jerry West, and owner Joe Lacob teed off Tuesday at Augusta, one of the world's most revered golf courses, where they were joined by Kerry's father, Dell, and others. Kerry, who is believed to be a 2 handicap, opened hot. He sinked a 10-foot birdie putt birdie for, yes, a 3 on the first hole. Even there, he's raining threes. But according to him, everything went downhill from there. To quote Kelly Carson on this, "Some people wait a lifetime for a moment like this." So, hey, and finally, the USGA, the United States Golf Association, announced the local qualifying sites for the 2016 U.S. Open Championship. The U.S. Open will be contested for a record 9th time at Oakmont Country Club, June 16th to the 19th. Local qualifying, conducted over 18 holes at 111 sites in 43 states, will take place between May 2 through the 19th. Those players who advance out of local qualifying will compete in a section of qualifying, which will be conducted over 36 holes at 10 U.S. sites on Monday, June the 6th. For the 12th consecutive year, Japan and England will host international section qualifying, both scheduled in late May. And finally, Fred, on the other side of the pond, 4 of the U.K.'s finest golf courses will become final qualifying venues for the 147th Open in 2018. Qualifying for golf's oldest and most international major championship will take place at Notts in Holywell in Nottinghamshire, Prince's Golf Club in Kent, the Renaissance Club in East Lothian, and St. Anne's Old Links in Lancashire from 2018 to 2021. The new ventures cover the northwest, central, and southern regions of England and Scotland to make qualifying events as accessible as possible for players. They will replace the current venues of Woburn, oh my God, Ian Poulter must be very, very upset, Royal Cinque Ports, Gale Links, and Hillside. Fred, where this year, there will be 12 plays in total from this venue, starting with a field of only 288 players.
Hey, Carlos, I've got a couple more items here. I guess we found out that Adam Scott has a little bit of a sense of humor. He said last week that he had sent retired RNA chief Peter Dawson, the man probably most responsible for the banishment of the anchored stroke, one of his old long putters, as a retirement gift. Scott said he got a nice note back from Dawson saying he had put it with all of his other obsolete clubs. I thought that's, who says golfers don't have a sense of humor? Reigning PGA champion and number two ranked player in the world, Jason Day received a nice honor in his homeland of Australia. He was named Australian Athlete of the Year. In his finest ever season on the United States PGA Tour, Day won his first major championship, the US PGA, as well as four other tournaments last year, reached the world number one ranking for a week or so. But it was his inspiring journey that captured the hearts of the nation, having returned from heartbreaking near misses at the U.S. Open and the British Open, and, you know, surviving his childhood and getting out of the problems that he had growing up. Bob Kearney, finally, Bob Kearney, a 59-year-old from Houston, Texas, has had a remarkable start to his 2016 golf year. He's one of the nation's better amateur players. He won the Old Corkscrew Senior in Estero, Florida, came in runner-up at the Gateway Senior at Fort Myers, then won the Kingsway Senior and the Golf Week Senior. Three wins plus a runner-up in four top-flight events, all in the month of January. Kearney said, "I'm not sure why I've been doing so well. I love to compete, and I have been keeping the ball in the fairway and in the hunt." Kearney worked for 33 years as a computer programmer and has qualified for the U.S. Opens, U.S. Amateurs, and Mid-Ams. The lesson here is, Carlos, beware of retired guys with time to practice. That's all I have for tonight, Carlos.
And that's all we have. Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Reports presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us the past 60 minutes. We didn't have a VAG today this week. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Black Duck Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If we haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back Nine Report, with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvaro. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the grand game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.